This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for tuning in this morning. On the phone with me is author Dan Ariely. He has just released his latest book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. Now, most of us think of ourselves as honest, but in fact, we all cheat. And this fascinating book explores all facets of just exactly how that happens. Good morning, Dan, and thanks for being here on Cincinnati Edition.
My pleasure.
Well, let's begin. You have written books before, Predictably Irrational and The Upside of Irrationality. How did you go from irrationality to dishonesty and honesty?
So it turns out that dishonesty and honesty are a perfect example of one irrationality. And it's irrational in two senses. One is that what really forces us to be dishonest is not what we think forces us. And the second thing is that what causes us to be dishonest and honest are not the rational forces, they are the irrational forces. So, for example, when we think about why people misbehave, we think it must be the cost-benefit analysis. We think that people are weighing the benefit of being dishonest and the cost of being dishonest. Turns out that's not the case. People rarely think about the long-term consequences of their actions. They rarely think about the cost and benefit. And instead, it's mostly about rationalization. It's mostly about our ability to misbehave on one hand and then think of ourselves as good people on the other hand and rationalize why what we're actually doing is perfectly okay.
Well, you start out the book talking about testing the simple model of rational crime and how you test folks about how much they may cheat, given the opportunity to cheat. And it is kind of surprising what you put up in how people, there's kind of a distance between whether they're going to get caught or not as to how much they cheat.
Yep. So we use some very simple methods to measure dishonesty. And the basic method we use is the following. We take a sheet of paper with 20 simple math problems that everybody could solve if you had enough time, but we don't give people enough time. So if you're in the experiment, I would say you have this sheet of paper, 20 simple math problems. I'll give you a dollar per question. Solve as many as you can. And you would start solving as fast as you can. At the end of the 5 minutes, I would say, please stop, put your pencil down, count down how many questions you got correctly, and then go to the back of the room and shred this piece of paper. You would do that, and then I would say, please come to the front of the room and tell me how many questions you got correctly. Now you have a chance to be dishonest. What happens? People report 6 questions, and they get paid $6. But what people in the experiment don't know is that we played with a shredder. So the shredder only shreds the sides of the page, but the main body of the page remains intact, and now we can jump into the shredder bin and we can find out how many questions people really solve. And what do we find? We find that people solve 4 and report to be solving 6. And it's not as if we have a few big cheaters. Actually, we have very, very few big cheaters, but we have a ton of little cheaters. So that's the basic paradigm. And now when you take this basic paradigm, you can ask yourself, what causes people to cheat more and what causes people to cheat less? So, for example, would promising them or giving them more money per correct question get people to cheat more? You would think the answer is yes, because they tend to gain more from cheating, but the answer is no. People don't cheat more when they tend to gain more from this. We varied it all the way from 10 cents per correct question to 50 cents to $1 to $2 to $5, even to $10. What about the probability of being caught? Again, we changed the probability of being caught and no reaction. On the other hand, and this, by the way, is the most distressing study I think we've ever done, is we change the distance from the action. And here is what we do. In the basic experiment, people finish shredding the piece of paper. They come and they say, Mr. Experimenter, I solved so-and-so many problems, give me so-and-so many dollars. And they say they ask for $6. In the other condition, they cheat for tokens. So when they look at the experimenter in the eye, they don't say, I solved so many problems, give me so many dollars. They say, I solved so many problems, give me so many tokens. We pay them in tokens. Then they take these tokens and they move 12 feet to the side and change them for dollars. What happened now? What happened when you cheat not for money but for something that is one step removed from money? Turns out our participants double their cheating. And for me, this is the most distressing result, one of the most distressing results we found, because if you think that as we get further away from money, it is easier for us to cheat – what does it mean about society as a whole? Because after all, we're moving to a cashless society. Electronic wallets as consumers, mortgage-backed securities, stock options, all kinds of higher representations of money. And could it be that with those in mind, people find it easier to be dishonest?
So distance from the money basically multiplies the dishonesty.
Yeah, in our experiment, multiply, I'm not sure it would always multiply, but I think it would always increase it. And you can think about distance in all kinds of terms, right? You could say, what if you don't know the person you're stealing from? What if it's multiple steps removed from money? What if it's in a different country? I mean, there's all kinds of things like that that I think change the perception of distance and with it allow people to be more dishonest.
Well, in this day and age, you also talk in the book about not only, you know, that's being dishonest with someone else, but how we're also dishonest with our own selves, that we're always being dishonest with ourselves. And I found that a bit scary, too.
Yeah, and there are a couple of ways in which we're dishonest with ourselves. One is this idea that we are quickly rationalizing different acts of dishonesty. So, for example, you know, when we look at big criminals, and I've talked to all kinds of criminals throughout this process, we tend to look at the whole sequence of events of somebody who's committed crime over, let's say, 10 years, and we look at their sequence of events, and we say to them, to ourselves, we could never do this. We could never be like this. But, of course, the criminal themselves might have not thought about that as a long sequence of crime. They might have thought about one step. And it turns out that when you look at things step at a time, we're much more likely to behave this way and then quickly rationalize our own actions. So that's one version of deceiving ourselves in which we rationalize it. And actually, if you looked at it and you basically try to count during a day how many times you are dishonest, you would find out that we're all, you know, we're all slightly dishonest all the time. Mostly it's in the form of white lies, you know, kind of the classical, honey, how do I look in that dress?
Or right.
Things that we don't want to offend people. But nevertheless, despite the amount of dishonest acts we have, we still think of ourselves as good people.
Behavioral economist Dan Ariely. His new book is The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. You can find a link to the book and more about Dan's work at our website, wvxu.org. Thanks for shining a light on a very fascinating topic, Dan. I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.